Hello, everyone, and welcome back to RPG. Oh, I'll wait. Good now. Okay, perfect. I was like, Craig's going to have to introduce himself in a second. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to RPG R&D. I am one of your hosts, Jess Geyer. I am one half of One of You Games, and I make tabletop role-playing games. And I am here, as always, with my co-host, Craig Campbell, human. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Jess. Yes, I am human, Craig Campbell, totally human, totally not a lizard person. I'm the owner of Nerdburger Games, and I make tabletop role-playing games and a card game. And we are here joined with a many-time guest returning, Jeffrey. Hello, welcome back.
Always a pleasure. I'm a dance machine, but otherwise human. But I am, when I get on the dance floor, I have people have said, "Oh, those moves! You power through those cool dance moves." Hello, it's great
Jeffrey
to be
only
there.
Knows how to do the robot.
I know how to do the robot and robot variations, the android, the cyborg, all your favorite 70s mechanical dance moves. I could do them.
I interrupted you in the middle of you introducing yourself, so go right on ahead.
Oh, sure. I'm Jeffrey Golden. I'm a game designer, narrative designer, and I got a Kickstarter. I'm coming out. You know, this is my first. I'm doing a crowdfunding campaign for the first time in almost a decade. And I'm back for Zine Fest, for Zine Quest on Kickstarter, because I'm very excited about Zine Quest. I've wanted to do it for a long time. And the game is called All Cards. It's the trading card storytelling game. And we could talk a little bit about that later.
That's awesome. So, okay. Yes, I'm very excited about that because I have questions.
Yes.
As somebody who has trading cards and does not use them, how can I use them?
You were exactly who I made the game for. That's me. I love buying trading cards. I love, like, you know how you go to a bookstore and you see there's like a stand and it's like New Kids on the Block cards and like D&D cards and like all the, you know, it's like Roger Rabbit cards. It's like those age cards. And I'm like, yes, I will take three packs of all of them, please.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I love them. I love opening them. And then I have them and I don't know what to do with them. And so I made a game, a zine game, where you can put those trading cards to good use, get them out of a box, get them out of a cardboard box in your closet, put them onto your game shelf where they belong. So that's the idea of All Cards.
Yeah, I have some D&D trading cards from the 90s or the 2000s, early 2000s maybe.
Okay, wait. These aren't the ones. I think I have the ones from the 90s or the late 80s that where they have like the black border and then they have like the logo. They have like a logo in the bottom right corner, like a gold logo in the bottom right corner. And then at the top, it's like says what's like set there for. So it's like a Ravenloft card, you know, and it'll show a creature from the
It's
right.
Like that.
Like I have like a bunch of those cards. Okay, yeah. I think those are from the late 80s, early 90s.
I'll check them out. I certainly didn't buy them contemporaneously.
Bunch of dorks.
Excuse me, Craig, on our podcast about role-playing games. On our podcast about role-playing games, we talk about two things. Nerd shit and business shit. Craig, what nerd shit and business shit do we have to talk about today?
We're going to talk about the advent and use and controversy a little bit surrounding the use of generative AI in role-playing games. In particular, there's very strong feelings about this when it comes to artwork and graphic kind of elements, things like that. But there's other parts of, you know, generative AI and different types of AIs are being developed and used in all sorts of different places. And they, you know, are sitting there kind of just in the pool waiting to be played with in pretty much any creative endeavor, because they can, you know, ostensibly cut down on time. They can help you kind of get some things done, streamline processes, and there's all sorts of other things that can happen. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. And I know we're going to be hearing some rather ardent opinions, but you know, hey, that's what you get to do when you have your own podcast. If you have a different opinion, you can make a podcast about it yourself, and I'll listen to it and probably get a little frustrated. But that's okay, because I'm not here to I'm not your mom, I'm not your dad, but I do have some things to say, and I think we all do.
Yeah, I've had this on the list of topics for a while, and Jeffrey's the first person to decide that.
Brave,
yeah,
this is what enough. We're gonna,
yeah,
brave and enough.
I think it's a good. I think it's a good time, because now, like, people kind of know. The first time I put it on the list, it was still kind of new. Like, when people were using it and trying it out, and people were like talking a lot about it. And I put it on the list there when it was new, because I already had strong feelings back then. I just, like, straight off the bat, I do not support generative AI. I don't think it belongs anywhere in art. I think art is, we'll talk about all the things I believe about art. I am anti-generative AI. I'm anti-tech bro just in general, which is ironic because I have a podcast. But yeah, I think this is a good time to talk about it, because everyone kind of knows now what their opinions are, and everyone knows what it's been doing. And we kind of can see the arc of this trajectory, hopefully leading towards a bubble, in my opinion, but hopefully, what the tech people want out of their AI doesn't actually come to be. But yeah, Jeffrey, why were you the brave one to pick this topic?
I like it.
I think it was on the list last time you were on our show too. So,
oh, was it?
It's been passed over by everybody on the list. It's been there for a while.
Mm-hmm. Oh shoot! Well, that's. You know, sometimes I'm just like attracted to a topic, and it's usually about something I'm thinking about right now. And so this is something I've been thinking about a lot right now. And so, this is definitely maybe when you said it to me the first time, I wasn't thinking about it as much. It was more of in the background for me. But my day job is in video games. I'm a narrative designer, and we have our studios, a small indie studio, and everybody has a lot of thoughts about AI. We're talking about it a lot, maybe a lot more, thinking about it a lot more than I was back then. But this is my initial take. Imagine like you were given a hammer. Right. And you're like, oh, this is what can this hammer do? And they're like, well, you can hit nails with it. And it's like, oh, OK, cool. All right. I will give that a shot. And then you try it. And like 90% of the time, it doesn't work. Like in this fantasy world of this analogy, like somehow the hammer hitting the nail does not actually like put the nail forward into the thing. It hits the side, you know, it hits it, but it doesn't hit it hard enough. And you'd be like, why doesn't this thing work? And they're like, no, like keep using it. And in fact, not only should you use it on that nail, but you should also like just hit other stuff hit everything with it. Like, why not? And it's like, why would I do that? Like, it's not even good at the thing that you said it was supposed to be good at in the first place. Why would I keep using it on other stuff? And it's like, the answer is, well, we spent billions of dollars on hammer research and hammer funding and marketing this hammer. And so we're really going to need you to use this hammer in like its everyday life. It would be even worse,
you know, if that hammer, every time you used it, like drained a couple gallons out of the pond out back. And then also the people who invented the hammer wanted to invent the hammer so they could, you know, implement a eugenicist project to put us all. I say this with zero exaggeration. The people who are like the top tier funders of this, like Peter Thiel, want to make us all, quote, happy beams of light playing with each other and having fun in the digital space. And they aren't afraid to kill a bunch of actual humans to make that happen. That would be wild.
That would be a weird world. You know,
so
a guy
weird.
can be trusted, by the way, when he goes, when he does like lectures around the world about the Antichrist. You know that that's like a good sign. That's like a good sign.
Good.
Your tech is being backed by some like real
He's
reliable
literally
folks.
Shinra, like literally.
It's like, you know what it's like? It's like, remember when O.J. Simpson made that book that was like, If I Did It? And it's like the ultimate like tell. I was like, well, if I did kill her, like this is how I would have done it. But of course I never did. And it's like, I love like Peter Thiel being like, listen, like, you know, I'm not the Antichrist, but if the Antichrist is probably
someone who's like, no, like me.
Someone's like me, maybe. It's really funny. Anyway, yeah,
I mean, all of that aside, like, why, like, even if you didn't know about any of that and all the ethics, like, there are reasons that you shouldn't use generative AI in your creative work as a game designer. Or, I mean, I might even just like take GMing like out of it, like putting that aside, like as a game designer, it's not going to be super great for your business especially if you are an indie game designer, because like the sentiment toward that is very much like what me and Jeffrey are saying, like they don't like it and they won't buy it, and they won't buy any of your stuff ever again, and they'll talk bad about you on the internet and make fun of you, and that is usually not a good outcome for your game. I think that that's like just like practically speaking, because all of these other creatives who are really important, like, yes, they're not necessarily the consumers of your game all the time. And like on a lot of these online platforms, you can buy, and a lot of people do buy a lot of AI slop to put into their games and like to add to their games or games that use it. That does happen.
Maybe you accidentally used an art asset or something that you paid for that turned out to be AI. I could see that happening.
It's gonna hurt your reputation as a designer if you're the one who's selling that stuff. It's really gonna hurt your reputation.
That's right. I agree with you. So the sentiment is decidedly negative, and with good reason. I mean, I can't think of a worse use case for generative AI than creative work. What are we talking about here? We're talking about a pattern recognition software, right? We're talking about a tool like AutoCorrect that basically it's examining the internet. It like sucks up the internet, and then it says, what is the probability if you input these words, there's a high probability that these words are what you're looking for. Like, it's like the least creative process you could think of. With creativity, we're trying to connect disparate ideas. We're trying to look for things to find new and interesting ways of making art and like making connections. This software is literally the opposite. It's basically trying to say, what's the most likely thing that you want? Like, it's like, oh, it's got to sound something like this, or it's got to look something like that. And it's like, well, no, we want the new, we want the fresh. Like, that's why we come to art. Like, we don't come to art to be regurgitating the same old things over and over again. We want to connect with people, and people are random and different and interesting. So to me, it's just like it's like the worst possible use case for it. And it's what they sold us on it right out the gate. Like, that was like the first use case of it. Like, I remember when it was being marketed, like in its earliest days, it was like, hey, it can write a poem, it can write a sonnet, it can draw a picture. And it's like, these are like the worst use cases for something that is a pattern recognition machine. We don't want art that is. How often do we go to a movie? When you go to a movie, the worst movies, right, are the ones that are just blah, because they just to try to give you exactly what you were expecting, right? The best movies are the ones that are really good because they made some like interesting and profound and amazing points, or that
and we're
really
connected
bad.
To the artist's experience as well is the important thing, which I think RPGs, like the games you design, should also be connected to your experiences and your thoughts and your creativity.
I agree. I mean, that's what is it? RPGs are systems, right? And systems are ways that like people like organize each other, right? It's like a set of rules. It's like a way, it's like, this is how we're going to live for the next 4 hours. These are like the rules we're going to abide by. Like that's a very human idea. And like, I want to be, if I'm playing a game, I want to play a game with interesting rules. I want to play a game with like thoughtful rules that like make me feel mm-hmm. like I understand the world or the designer a little better. I don't want to play a game that's just regurgitating what other games are like, you know? Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of like when people are using it as their designers, I think a lot of people, especially at the beginning, were really excited because it meant that they could quote unquote make their own art for their games. And again, if you do that, you're going to have a bunch of artists who will never work with you again, which you probably don't want, especially when they start rolling. Like right now, like Gemini and ChatGPT and all these other models and things like that, they're all free right now, but they won't be free forever. And they're going to get more expensive if they stay around. It's all like, it depends on what they want for the market, because it's all going to be this capitalist adventure. In the future, if you do ever need to get a piece of art, the real artists are not going to make that for you because you did take this point. And that might not seem fair to you. Like, I'm trying to like be like the most, I'm trying to be kind of reasonable here. I've been yelled at about my opinions on AI before.
I don't like that. there's the argument I've seen where it's like, well, it is, you know, it is elitist to say that you don't support generative AI for artwork. Why should artists have like a monopoly on on being able to create art? And it's like, well, because they worked at it, like they trained their whole lives to be good at it. It's not like they were like born with like a silver spoon. It's not like these artists hoarding all the talent. Like it was hard work and sacrifice is why the artist is super talented. But like, good news, like so many like amazing artists like make their work available for free or for very little. Like, you could go, anybody who was be like, I need to use generative AI, be like, go on itch.io and look up, you're making a fantasy role-playing game, look up fantasy art packs like on itch.
Yeah.
Oftentimes you can get them for like, it's like $25, and here is like 100 maps, like 100 hand-drawn maps, or like pieces of maps, or like here's like 10 drawings of fairies, and like one of them is bound to be right. Like, there's just so many resources out there. Like, even if you don't have the money to like commission something new, like you probably have, you know, the resources to get something, you know, that's a human made, you know, that you could support a real person, that's going to be great for your game. Like, it's just I want to say you were 100% right about the price going up. It's going to go up because this is inshittification. This is what they did. I remember when Uber was incredibly cheap. Remember how cheap Uber was at the beginning? Oh, it was so cheap.
Yeah.
Oh, I could get an Uber. I'd get an Uber for less than the bus. Like to take. Oh,
and now you can't get a taxi.
Now you can't get a taxi, and those Ubers are 3 times as expensive as they were because they put the taxi companies out of business, because that's how this works. And they want to do that with human labor. Like, that's the game, is like, how do we like put like big swaths of human labor out of work and then replace them with us. You know, and that's pretty scary, but like, you know, yeah, if you come to rely on it, it's eventually you're going to pay a lot of money, and you're going to pay it to like a faceless corporation. You might as well pay a small amount of money to like real artists. And by the way, maybe make some friends, like maybe find some collaborators, maybe like form a, you know, like I worked with many years ago, my wife and I, we ran a publishing house, and we used to employ artists all the time for our books. You know, we did a lot of humor books and comic books, illustrated books. So we would employ artists all the time. A lot of those people who we employ, I'm friends with them today. They come over to my house for parties. We're close friends. We haven't run the press in 8 years or something like that. But it's like, but we're still like close friends. Like, there's a lot of value in working with real people.
Quickly to chime in here. I just want to make a note here for everybody listening that I'm getting over a cold right now, and so I'm not speaking as much. My relative lack of speech here in the first half of the episode is not a dissenting opinion, for the record. I believe pretty much exactly what Jeffrey and Jess have been saying. I've just been say it.
It would be amazing if you were just fuming.
I just suddenly came gunning for you. when all previous discussions with me on this topic would prove otherwise. Somewhere in there I had a giant opinion change. But I want to throw this out there. This was kind of danced around a little bit by both of you. The thing that, you know, I agree with everything you've said, and that doesn't need to be reiterated, but the thing that really kills me about in particular artwork, quote unquote, created through generative AI, is it lacks soul. Art that is created by a human brain and a human hand and a human eye brings with it that artist's personality, the skill and time and effort that they've taken in honing their craft. It brings with them their interpretations of other art that they meld into their own styles, and they mash up things and they do things, and it influences how they view things and the types of styles and the things that they create. Just little flourishes and things that come out that are very much of them. And, you know, it has to do with how they grew up and what their experiences have been and all this sort of stuff. And so, and even if I don't know all those details, and even if I don't, you know, I can't say like, oh, I look at this and I can see the artist's pain, you know, or whatever, like it is there. Because that is the nature of a creative endeavor. And the reason I know it's there is because I make tabletop role-playing games, and I consider them to be art in the truest sense of the word art. So I know that happens with me. Like when I created, I'm like, there's pieces of me in that work. When you say that, like the person who's putting the prompts in is the artist, I would argue they are the art director and the app is the quote unquote artist. Because what they're prompting that they're doing is not terribly different. It might be more complicated, and you know, iterative than the art orders that one of us or our art director might give to an artist. But the app is making the art, and the app is just like we've talked about. It's just scraping rudimentary information about like, well, this is what this sort of art looks like, and can you do. Like really, really good, if you prompt it right the right way, really, really good, like carbon copies of stuff done by artists with recognizable styles that you might be like, well, I can get something that looks like it was done by Brahm without having to pay Brahm.
Technical, but not spiritual, you know?
Right.
It's technical, but not spiritual.
And so it's, I want to see art that, and you know, that is made by human beings, and in the case of tabletop role-playing games, it is art that contains other art that all comes together in this glorious, weird collage of storytelling and camaraderie and fun at the table and making friends and all these other wonderful things we've associated with role-playing games. And to integrate something that has none of that is kind of a slap in the face across the board to everybody who does put themselves in their art.
I mean, Craig, I'm reminded of your like Secrets of the Vibrant Isle series. And I remember when the second one came out, you said you didn't know if there was going to be a third one because it had to do with the artist. Like the artist was the important part of that. And like the art is so important in those games because that is like the whole thing that sets up like the setting, I feel, in those games. And
yeah,
you said, no, I mean, I need the artist to be inspired before I can actually produce the third one.
Well, and I dug myself into a hole by saying, okay, here's the Vibrant Isle, so we'll have like fantastical things on an island, and then here's the Vibrant Sea, so we'll have fantastical things under the water. And I made that one because I noticed that the artist had already created art that was like, mm-hmm. Oh, there's all sorts of like jellyfish and mermaids and all sorts of cool stuff that Gemma has drawn. And so when I was getting to the third one, I was kind of like, well, I've done the on the land and I've done the under the water, like what's left to do? So it percolated in my mind for so long. And I finally kind of went and I dug really deep on Gemma's artwork. And she's known as Ashen Wave on social media. And this is all art that I licensed from her. It's just stuff from her imagination that she created. And I went looking and I dug deep and like, see, like how much of this kind of stuff is there? How much of that kind of stuff? And that's what inspired what is being playtested at starting as of next week, which is Secrets of the Vibrant Sky, because I was like, oh, there's quite a lot of like flying birds and cloud things and, hot air balloon illustration and, you know, some cosmic kind of sky, you know, planets and stars and suns and things. And so that was where I was like, oh, now that inspires me into creating a thing. So it was art inspiring art. And it took me like a year to kind of wrap my head around what that might be.
Yeah. And just based on
the art that I found.
That's the process that you lose when you're just like going online and doing it, you know? I want to talk to, like, before we talk about all the other resources, because Jeffrey, you mentioned that you can go on Itch and like buy art packs and things like that. Those are treasure troves. We can talk about some other tips for people who maybe don't have the budget to then go out and afford things. I don't think you have an excuse for your writing. But I want to talk about people who use it as a way to brainstorm or as a way to outline their ideas. And some people might be thinking like, well, can't I do that? Is that like, you don't have to believe what I believe. Like, obviously, I think my opinion is correct, but you don't have to listen to me. I'm not your boss or your dad either. But I am your judge. if you start relying on these tools, you are going to atrophy your creative muscle, like any other skill, but especially creativity. Creativity builds on more creativity and more creativity and more creativity, and doubt kills your creativity so quickly in a lot of ways. You have to like constantly be fighting that as an artist or a writer or any other creative. And if I want to like the situation I always think about is like, if I generated a list of ideas, but I have my own ideas too, and I see something on that list of ideas and I think that's better than what I thought, I've just planted that seed of doubt inside of my head and I've chipped away at the foundation of my creativity. And I'm saying that my idea was worse than this idea. Instead of just doing my idea is worse than this idea. I want to take this one. And if you keep doing that, you're really going to damage that creativity that you have because you are a human and can create things. And I would really like, if you're a GM, I would also really, really caution and warn you away from using those tools too, because you are eventually going to be relying on that tool more exclusively. You're not going to be like, part of the creative process is having an idea that is not perfect, not the best, building on that, getting those muscles, practicing that skill, and then doing it again and doing it again. And if you don't let yourself go through that process, you will never become a better GM. You will never become a better writer. You will never learn any of those skills. And it's just not good practice. If I drive a car everywhere and I never use my legs, I will not be able to stand up on my own. It is just the way the same thing works. And I'm already seeing it happen with teachers in my life who are using AI to make things and grade things. And I'm seeing it with my students. It is a little scary on that end. And I know that I don't want that to happen to me, because for me, like, the thing that makes me, like, the thing that I value the most about myself is my creativity, and I could never gamble that away. So that's my cautionary tale to everybody. And I will judge you if you do it.
Yeah. Also. I think that's profound. A big problem I have with this, with these tools as brainstorming, is that it gives you bad ideas. Like, not bad in the sense of like, oh, this is like objectively terrible. Like, bad in that it gives you like middle of the road garbage. Like,
but even if it did give you a good idea, you know?
Right. Well, but that's the thing. That's the thing that, like, everybody says it's like, but what if it was good? And it's like, but it's not good. Like, so we don't have to play this theoretical. This technology didn't just come around. They've been working on it for a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody is like, it's only going to get better. It's like, it's not getting better. And in fact, I think it's probably plateaued. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I can kind of tell that it's plateaued, because the major companies that make it are passing $100 billion bills between each other to try to juice their stock prices, because they know that they've plateaued, because there's no great innovations that are happening here. It's just kind of the same stuff over and over again. And so, like, with it as like a brainstorming tool, it's like, well, I mean, if you want to brainstorm, like, come up with, like, you know, ideas that, like, everybody comes up with, like, ideas that it basically found on some website and then it's like regurgitated right to you, like, sure. But here's what I find is the best inspiration is real life. Yeah. So for example, I'm working right now on a Starship game. This is in my video game job. I'm working on a Starship game, and I'm doing design work. And the design prompt that I'm working on right now is what will be the various parts of the Starship, right? Like, how, like, what will the various parts be? You know, the engine, the battery, the cockpit, you know, the cargo hold, right? Okay, what are all the different parts of the starships that we're going to have, and how do they work, like, from a mechanical perspective? Okay, now I could go to ChatGPT and I could say, ChatGPT, tell me what are the different parts of the starship, and it'll probably farm to a freaking
sci-fi
Star
forum
Wars wiki
from, yeah,
right,
yeah.
Star Wars wiki, Star Trek wiki, whatever, and then it will just spit back out, here's the information, here are the parts of your starship, right? But I found the more inspiring route was to research, how do planes work? How do steamer ships work? And, like, once I learned, like, how these things, and by the way, I'm not a smart man when it comes to book learning and science and stuff like that. Basically, I learn up to the test. I'm the kind of person who is like, okay, I'm going to study for the test. I'll get well on the test, and then I will forget everything that I will forget it all. But I recognize that, like, oh, when I looked and I see, like, what are the different types of electric car batteries? How are they different from each other? And it's like, I'm learning, and it's like fascinating. It's like, oh, like, efficiency is a thing, you know, reliability is a thing. It's like, okay, great. These are great mechanics. You know, mm-hmm. these are mm-hmm. potentially great mechanics for the game. Okay. Well, you could buy this battery. It's less it's less money, and it is considerably less reliable. It has a 30% chance of blowing up, but you could get it for, you know, you could get it for your starship for very cheap, you know, like, suddenly, like, I came up with a flood of ideas. And it's just through observing, researching real life and observing real life, I think is you're going to make those profound connections much better than the machine that scrapes the internet and then rubs the serial numbers off its work and then says, this is, you know, this is what you wanted. This is what you wanted, right?
Also, like, again, like the thing that we have to fight against as creatives is doubt and like the difficulty of creating. And also the other thing we have to fight against as gamers is the nature of being misanthropic and antisocial. And you know who else is a free resource to talk and bounce ideas and brainstorm off of? Your friends and other people in the business. Craig does this all the time as well. Craig, I'm helping you get some stuff here because I know that you're not able to speak as much. Craig is always like on our Discord channel or like on Facebook asking about ideas. Like, what do you think about this? Like tell me what you think, and then gets all these different ideas, and I see them pop back up in his work, and that makes Craig's games better. I have a design partner. My husband and I design games together, and I design games with other people as well. And talking about ideas with them makes my ideas better too, and I don't need a computer to do that because I have made connections, and they're now all of their experience and richness and life is also now enriching my art. And I think that and it's also not just that, it's also enriching me, and it's they're people that whose recommendations I value and appreciate too. So like it's not just like for the good of my game, but it's also like this social project too, which is another skill you don't want to atrophy when you are a game designer, because you have to network and you have to do all these things to sell your game, and people have to actually, you have to care about your game too, for other people to care about it.
I find that in general, people love to give ideas. I certainly do. I 100% do. But somebody is like, hey, like, I'm, you know, this is a goblin encounter or whatever. Like, what could they run into here? Like, I'll give you a million ideas. I love that. That like spitballing process that like comes through. That's great. It's great fun, you know? And then you say, oh, thank you so much. Hey, next time, you know, we go out to drinks or whatever, do your first drinks on me. And then we have a good time. And it's fun. And it is creativity.
And it's an exchange, like, too. It's not it's like exchange. One
it's
person.
Fun.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It leads to good times. You know, it doesn't make the planet worse. It doesn't steal from other artists. It just makes us all. It enriches us.
Actually. My social group is the dump oil in the river and also steal from children social group and drinking club. So don't speak for me, please.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, you guys. Yeah, there's a lot of antisocial groups out there. I should be more care. I should be more careful when implying that the exchange of ideas could lead to good times for all.
Jeffrey, you mentioned, like I said, you mentioned the art packs at on itch.io. Where are some other places we could go? Like, if I want some quote unquote free art and free ideas and free writing, yep, or cheap, what could we do?
Absolutely. These are some of my go-tos. One is Wikimedia Commons.
Oh yeah.
You just have to be careful. You know, just look at the rights. They under every image, there's a thing that says, this is what the rights things are. You just look for public domain, or, you know, a lot of them are Creative Commons attribution. So if that's the case, you just have to make sure to attribute in your manual to say, this is where I got it from. I like this one site called FreePick, FreePik. The only problem, though, is that there are AI images mm-hmm. in there, but they let you turn that off. So you say, no AI images, only ones made by humans, please. And then it will show you tons. FreePick is great for like more like moderny looking stuff. So if you were making like, say you were... you were doing looking for like infographic-y stuff, like here's like a picture of like playing people, some hand holding playing cards, or like, you know, tokens or dice or something like that. I think FreePick would be a good resource for that. Mm-hmm. There is a blog I'll shout out called Skeleton Code Machine, which I read regularly. It's a great newsletter for game designers in general. And every week the author analyzes a different game and picks out some of the interesting mechanics. It talks about them, but The author did two posts about where you can get free copyright free the stuff for your games, and they went around the internet. A lot of his recommendations were museum websites, so and like library websites, like often have like libraries and stuff access to free art and assets and things like that. As I said, like Itch is so good.
Yeah.
Because there's so many game designers on there, and it's like there's so many like artists who are like, oh, I know, like there's all these game designers here, like I'll just make art packs for them. There's some if you're doing like looking for like anime style art, they have these like anime character generators that people make, where it's like here's like a pack of like a bunch of body shapes, a bunch of head shapes, and they're like paper dolls. You can like put them together, and you can like create a character. I think it's super neat. It's so cool. So there's a lot of resources out there. You know, you just have to you have to know where to look. And I think those are some good starting places. Where do you guys look for public domain stuff?
I have been, well, right now I have my game for ZineQuest uses old public domain art, specifically from the Baroque and early Renaissance or late Renaissance periods, because my game is set in Baroque and late Renaissance periods, and specifically from female artists of those times, because it's relevant to my game. So I take those and then I remix them, because I like to remix. I like to collage. I like to recolor. I like to edit. I like to add other little like, for example, I'm currently right now making a tarot inspired card based off of one of Jim Lameshi's works. And that requires like me remixing a few of these different artifacts and adding things in and just collaging together. And I really, really like to do that. I did the same thing. I've done very similar things with a few other books that I've made. Steamboat Willie is literally just all of the public domain art now from Steamboat Willie. So I got to take it for free, and Disney has made so much money off of me, and now I can take it back from them.
There's a Lego set now.
Yeah.
A black and white Steamboat Willie Lego set.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Unlicensed.
You can just do that now.
I just want to say that I am a big proponent of the public domain. I'm excited about it. And this is my second year in a row. My, game dev friend Gwen Katz and I we participated in the public domain game jam. Yes. And I highly recommend it. Every January it's a month-long jam for both physical games and digital games, and the prompt is to use work that just entered into the public domain. So last year we won the jam, the video game side of the jam, for a hotel simulator based on the Coconuts, the Marx Brothers first movie. And this year we did a Nancy Drew point and click mystery game that's gotten a lot of great comments. And so
I'm sorry, you need to send that to me. I need that. I love Nancy Drew games.
Amazing. Oh, then I will look forward to your thoughts on it. Zoom. I read Nancy Drew for the first time. I read the first two books this last month.
Secret of the Old Clock's great. Yeah,
I love Secret of the Old Clock. I thought that was great. So she's very, it's a very, she's so optimistic. Mm-hmm. It's like there's not a lot of like purely altruistic detectives like Nancy Drew is in that book. Like, a lot of them, you know, it's like you satisfy their ego, or it's like, I'm the world's greatest detective, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. or for money, they do it for money. And she just does it because there's all these like poor people who like need help. And she like solves mysteries for them. And like, Nancy Drew rules. Yeah, like, this is great. This is like hope punk, basically.
Yeah. I've been a long time Nancy Drew fan. Yeah, she's great. One of my favorite characters in fiction, for sure. And you know what you couldn't do is make that with AI. you just couldn't.
No.
Or sure you could. You could just put in a prompt to create for me the details of a Nancy Drew like.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you perfect. You could
Nancy Drew like just teen detective.
Right. Yeah, you can do it. It's just will not be good. Like, and it will hurt the
it'll
world.
It will hurt you.
But by all means, you can. Sure. Although it'll probably also be super buggy too. Anyway, yes, I put the link in the chat, by the way.
Thank
and you can, if you want, you can put it in the show notes for people. You can find it on it's a little difficult. Gwen C. Katz, GwenCKatz .itch.io, and then you'll see the Nancy Drew game.
Super excited for that. I use Public Domain Review. That's my favorite website to look for public domain stuff. And the nice thing is that they curate that into collections, so you can go out and get inspired. Our game Three Threads, originally we used other art and including a picture of our dog for it. But when we did a print version of it, I went out and I made it look like an illuminated manuscript using public domain from old medieval manuscripts. That was really nice. And I think that like, when you do that, you can make a little bit of money off your game. And then you can use that to then go pay artists for yourself. And if you're not, or you can do what here's one more source before I say this. Friend of the pod, Starshine Scribbles. Starshinescribbles.com, I believe is their website. Yeah, starshinescribbles.com. They have a TTRPG Creator Resources Master Post that you can use and find a bunch of resources on. And then you could also do what just the past week's guest on this podcast did. Spencer Campbell is zine questing a game called Gobs, where he himself is drawing all the little goblins. And he's not a great artist. He's not like a super talented artist. Sorry, Spencer. I think you know this with your goblins that you're making. It's not like super professional work, but it fits the game, and that is art. And you can do that too. You can put your shitty art in your own game, and it's going to make it better.
Someday. I'll be brave enough to do that. I'm brave enough to take on this topic, but I'm not quite brave enough yet to put my own art into one of my games. But I aspire to that. And I think calling it Gobs is just adorable. I like thinking about that. I think a little about little gobs. It's very cute.
I want to throw out something real quick. When it comes to your various, Pixabay, Unsplash, we talked about you can go and get graphic elements or artwork or photography from these places. And generally, at least some portion of it is royalty free. You can use it as you see fit. Check when it comes to those, and when it comes to stock art too, check whatever the license is for use, check what that entails. And you can oftentimes find things that you can like, now I can take this and I can manipulate this. Mm-hmm. I used Hypersleep Terminated. I used J.E. Shields' artwork, and part of the license that he grants with black and white line art is that you can make modifications. And here's the list of modifications that you can make. You can do this, you did this, you can add color, because I wanted black and white artwork with splashes of red thematically throughout the game. And so I was able to take his black and white artwork and just, go into a basic, Photoshop type program, just boop, 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 put some red in there where I needed to. So you can spruce things up a little bit too, if you look for the stuff that's being provided with permission granted to, do X, Y, and Z to it.
We gotta wrap up. We could talk about this for a million years.
Yes.
Jeffrey, thank you for coming on and talking about it for about an hour with us.
My pleasure. Absolutely. And anytime, if this episode is, if a part two is hotly anticipated, I'm happy to talk about it again.
Yeah, I'm planning on drumming up a bit of a. I'm joking.
What's that Kickstarter?
Find...
Yeah, oh. Sorry. What's that Kickstarter again? And
yes,
and everything about you.
Yes, I'm Jeffrey. I am kickstarting a game for Z Quest called All Cards. That's CARDS. Hopefully we could put a link in the show notes. That'd be cool. We'll see if we could do that. But so what is the game? The game is a story. It's a storytelling, a strategic storytelling game you play with your trading cards. So the game combines TTRPG style group storytelling, or in this case, dual storytelling. It's a 1 to 2 person game. So you combine that sort of collaborative storytelling from TTRPGs with sort of light TCG trading card game battle mechanics to sort of give your story structure. So because all stories stem from conflict. And so basically in this game, you have your trading cards. You can use any, all cards are compatible. That's why the game's called All Cards. Pokemon, Magic, Garbage Pail Kids, your D&D cards, they're all compatible with this game.
My baseball
cards? You make
cards?
A deck. Your baseball cards are definitely compatible. Yes. And basketball, if you're me. I have more basketball cards than baseball cards. I was a 90s basketball kid. I liked the Charlotte Hornets. I don't know why. I just did. So we've got, so you put together a deck based on your trading cards, and then you you battle your friend who has their trading cards. And each of you picks a character from your deck. So I could pick maybe Pikachu, and they pick, pick Wario. They pick Pete Rose, right. And I'll say, well, my goal, Pikachu's goal is to start a chili hot dog stand. That's been his goal, the chili dog stand. That's Pikachu's main goal. And Pete Rose is a health inspector who does not want Pikachu to start this hot dog stand at all because he thinks it will poison the people. Your goals are in conflict, and you play cards and you use those cards to further your goal for your character or to try to sabotage the goal of your rival character. And through that, you tell a 6-scene story that ends in a conclusion, and you build points along the way as you play. And whoever has the most points at the end of the game gets to control how the story ends. So you are playing, you are telling the story collaboratively, and at the end, it's a competition over who gets to have the happy ending. So that's All Cards, the storytelling trading card game, and you could find it on Kickstarter throughout the month of February for Zine Quest. And you can find out more about me and my work at jeffreygolden.com, GeoffreyGolden.com.
Thanks again for coming on. I also have a Zine Quest project. It's called Aqua Tofana. It is a baroque solo journaling game about poisoning your husband.
Oh, that's hilarious.
You can find that on...
Alex?
Alex is in high support of this game.
Oh, okay.
And it's about women's rights in Baroque in the 1600s Italy. So you can play that game there, and you can also find the rest of my stuff at wannabegames.itch.io or our Beehive Wannabe Games.
And you can find all of my stuff in the socials with I'm typically Nerdburger Craig for social media. The website is nerdburgergames.com. You can buy the games there. You can also buy them at DriveThruRPG. And this is the 10-year anniversary of Nerdburger Games. Woohoo! So we're wrapping up Secrets of the Vibrant Sky. So I don't have a Kickstarter now, but I will in a little while. I still got to finish up some things, but that's what we're moving towards. So we can hopefully have that ready and on the table along with Cosmic Corsairs as new products at Gen Con, which is where we're going to kind of, you know, do a little dance and sing a little song about 10 years in publishing games.
Thank you for our opening and closing theme song, which is Avel or Avel, which I always pronounce Avel because I feel like it should be, by Steph Sachs, a human made piece of art licensed for free under the Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you, Steph Sachs. And thank all of you human listeners for listening and the bots who are going to remix our message. Bye. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.